I kept the one in the last one.
Do it once where you don't immediately go good job after, like when we're a little golden retriever.
I'm just marking behavior.
Don't mark my behavior.
Can I mark it if I throw an Oreo at you after?
Yeah.
Okay. I will. Okay, I don't have Oreos. I'll go find a Sour Patch Kid.
Okay.
I love that you're now immediately receptive to this.
Because that's actually marking behavior. Otherwise, you're just like being condescending.
No, I'm helping.
Oh, shut up.
What are we talking about today, Sienna?
You pulled my line.
Yeah, I did.
Fuck you. We're talking about...
Do you know that in the first few episodes of this ever existing, you barely swore at me. You didn't really yell at me. You weren't mean to me at all.
Did you know in the first year of working for you, I didn't swear at you a lot?
Yeah.
Like, ever.
I know. Now, though, I'm listening to all of the podcasts from recently, and you know how often you now just lay into me? It's so mean. It's hurting my feelings.
It's because you need it.
Well, I'm not denying that.
Everybody else is scared of you, so you need someone who's not.
I'm not scared.
Nobody else is flipping you off in there.
Yeah, that's true.
No, none of them do.
That's true. That's
sometimes
very
you
true.
Need that.
Yeah, fair enough. Listen, as long as you have a reason behind it and you're aware of it, like you're aware that you went from basically never, certainly never swearing at me, much less like calling me out and reading me the riot act.
Right.
Now, if I'm lucky, I can get away with you just like telling
Once
me to go
fuck
myself.
Once upon a time, you were my boss. Now you're my boss, but what are you going to do? Fire me? Okay.
Yeah, pretty
Feels
much.
Like I'm pretty locked in here, but yeah, okay.
What are we actually going to talk about here today, though, functionally, with helpful advice?
Because
we're
helpful, helpful people. Well, before I was so rudely interrupted, I was saying how we were going to talk about disabilities in dogs.
Okay. And what? You gave me a weird look.
I said that, and you gave me a look like that. I changed the topic last minute.
No, I thought you were going to keep going with words.
No.
Okay, because I thought when we wrote it down, it was like disabilities in dogs and in the realm of training. Like when we wrote it down, I wrote extra words on
no,
mine.
No, all I have here is disabilities in dogs. So are we talking about how we train disabled
dogs?
Yeah,
like the differences between...
Is this politically correct? That's fine.
I mean, you could Google it, but I think we could just say there's disabilities in dogs.
Right.
I think it's okay. Listen, if you are listening to this podcast and you have a better idea on how to present this topic, please let us know. Like, we are very receptive to
it.
However, we're just doing a fast Google on how to say this politically correct. But we are going to talk about training...
Training them.
Yeah, training dogs with disabilities and how that differs from just training any dog that walks through the door. Because today, randomly, we had a class with, we just had like a quick little twofer. We had two people in a class. And randomly, both of their dogs had various issues that are going to become more severe as they get older.
Yes.
So they both have...
Very young. They're both very young dogs.
Yeah, they're
dogs.
Both very, very young dogs with disabilities that will get more severe and they will slowly progress through their lives and probably get... In one case, probably get very bad before they're like 5 or 6. And in another case, it will probably get significant and affect his life a little bit, but not crazy.
I don't think it'll get wild.
I think it'll just... It will be something to consider as he gets older. But so we did... We had a class and we randomly, as we were teaching both of these dogs,
we
kind of took a sidebar to be like, hey, you should do this and this. And then we looked at both of them and went, you also have to do this and this for this dog. And then we went, oh my God, people should know this, because that was actually, she pulled me aside after and she was like, this was actually the support I had hoped to get from the breeder, because like, I talked to the breeder and the breeder's just like, nope, that's not my problem.
It's not my problem. It's not my dog.
And she goes, I honestly didn't want to return the dog. I didn't want to, get money back from the dog.
I just
I didn't
don't know anything about it.
Yeah, I just wanted like a little bit of support of like, what is the best way to go forward
what
with
should
this?
I do?
And yeah, what should I do That's to make nice sure he's super comfy for the rest of his life? And she basically just said, the breeder just said, nope, that's not my problem at all to even help or support you with this dog. And she,
I also
said, that's rude.
That is rude.
And I was just like, hey, this is something you should get him used to now so that in the future, if this gets really bad, not just kind of bad, then he's okay. Or at least he's comfy.
Yeah.
And she said, well, that is a super good thing to know. So that's kind of what kicked all this off. And here we are talking about when you are working with dogs that either have disabilities or that have something that could progress, and you know they have something that could progress, how to work that in.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we do that often.
I feel like we notice them, and then, yeah, from there, we're just like, ooh.
Yeah.
We got to deal with this.
Yeah, once we notice an issue, I will say a lot of times we're dealing with some sort of behavior issue, and then we're training dogs, and then in the middle of that session or in the middle of that
journey
set of training program, whatever, someone all in the middle of something will be like, oh yeah, well, he has a spinal condition.
Yeah,
because our whole 4-page assessment and all the vet history and everything, everybody gives us the vaccine history because we asked for that, and everybody gives us the behavior history because there are 4 pages, but we did leave, now there is a spot on the final page that says, is there anything else we should know about your dog?
Yeah.
And there we have major good luck with people putting
spinal issues, muscle death, something
degenerative eye, like all the IVDD teeth gone. Like, hey, the discs are slowly degenerating, that's a good place to put that. Just that's put a that good somewhere. One
as a sidebar, you should tell any of the dog professionals that handle your dog about any of those type of things, please.
And we're talking not just your vet, but your groomer, your trainer, you board your dog.
Yes. I mean, anything.
Yeah, literally anyone that comes in contact with your dog, if they're going to be watching it for longer than 10 minutes, you should be like, hey, by the way, it has a spinal condition. Hey, by the way, it can't see.
Hey, by the way, it's kind of deaf.
Yeah. That's a good one. So, well, one of the ones we can talk about for sure is like, we train several deaf dogs.
Yeah.
We train lots of deaf dogs.
You like deaf dogs.
I love deaf dogs. They're great. Like, I love training deaf dogs.
Why, Steph?
Well, because it's pretty much the same as training any other dog that comes through.
Yeah.
Except I get to tell my owners. Jazz hands. Yeah, I do use more jazz hands because I tell my owners, sometimes when owners come in with a hearing dog, I say, guess what? You're no longer allowed to say words. I frequently like to tell people they're not allowed to use their words.
I actually really like watching you train a deaf dog because you actually seem a lot happier. You just seem like you're both listening to like elevator music and you're just like, boop, boop, let's go.
Well, yeah, because I don't want to talk the whole time I'm training. I never want to keep talking. And like, when I train by myself, I never
talk. And I was going to say, it's not like when you're training any dog, it's like you talk a lot, you're doing that. But it's just like, as soon as you're with a deaf dog, it's just fun to watch you do it because it's like...
Well, because then there's no pressure to have to talk to the dog. And like, because people... when I train by myself, do not talk to my dogs a lot unless they're like my personal dogs. Yeah. And then I'll keep up a running commentary like I'm talking to a friend. Like I'm talking to you, I'm talking to a person, I'm talking to someone I know. I will talk to my dogs just like they're people though.
Yeah.
When I'm training a client dog, I never talk. Like I don't talk because they're working for someone they don't have a relationship with. That's confusing enough.
Yeah.
There's nothing happening. The only time I have to talk when I'm training a dog that isn't mine is when I'm also with the owners. I'm also with the clients because I find they get really weirded out as soon as I start training the dog and I'm just like,
silently.
Yeah, I'm just like training the dog.
Yeah.
And then
awkward.
Yeah, they tend to get really, well.
Like, what are you doing? And or I feel like, because if you don't want to describe what you're doing, at least if you're talking to the dog, they go, okay, at least he's training my dog.
Yes.
Whereas if you're just not talking to the dog and you're not talking to them, it's like you're not teaching and you're also not doing anything. And it's weird.
So if... Like, a lot of times when I train a dog in front of people, I will just talk to the owner and I will describe verbally what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But if I'm not doing that, if for some reason I've already done that and they're asking for another demo, they're getting another demo, we're doing it slightly different, and then I can't just retell you what I'm doing again because it would be awkward for whatever reason, then I just train silently, but then you can tell the owners are immediately, like, thrown off because we're just in silence, and I go, no, like, it's fine. But with a deaf dog, I never feel like I need to do that because I need to kind of point out to the owner that
but
you also need
to not hear it. Can't hear anything, but...
Yeah, I need you to also not to train with words because you keep trying to just tell the dog to sit and you just keep yelling at the dog. So I specifically finally get to train a client dog with a client
and be quiet.
And just be quiet. Yeah. Silence is my favorite sound, yes. Folks. It's great. So, most dogs learn through body language. They're really good with body language. Yeah. They're super good. Deaf dogs, same. Like they rock through body language. And if you're not focused on what you're saying, if you're focused on what you're doing, then you're going to be able to communicate with them a lot better because then you're more cognizant and consistent, yes, with your body language. And I really like training deaf dogs. I think it's great because I don't have to talk to the owners. Yeah. I don't feel like I have to talk to the dog.
It's just doing a clear picture of what you do with all dogs, but it just does a really good
time of demoing that. Yeah, I'm so happy. It's so great. It's honestly great. So I don't find a lot different. The only thing I will change with a deaf dog is, like, we do recall on long lines for years, and if someone is eligible and if someone has done a lot of prior training and if they have decent timing and they want an e-collar program, then we will potentially allow them an e-collar program for regular dogs. For a deaf dog, if you prove you have decent timing and you prove you are like, hey, you're following through on training.
You have enough good training.
Yeah, the only difference there is I will e-collar train your dog I'm willing to do it at a younger age.
Yes.
Before you prove to me a series of things. You just have to prove to me kind of a few things, and you have to prove that you have decent timing, and I'm willing to train earlier.
What would you say is a disability that you have that you feel like you're training with, you have to make like big changes with? Because like I would say like, deaf, we wouldn't say there's a
blind
huge change.
Dogs.
Blind?
Yeah, I would say blind dogs, because we've only trained a couple blind dogs. We've had a couple, like, we've had partially blind, we've had going blind, we've had one eye. We've only had a handful of truly, completely
blind.
No eyes, we are blind.
Yeah.
We've had a lot of, like, hey, this dog is vision impaired, but the difference between a dog that has partial sight and a dog that has full sight is not that big. The difference between a dog that has partial sight or full sight and zero sight, wildly different.
Yeah.
The difference in training a dog that has like some hearing loss and full hearing loss and fully hearing, honestly, you could train all three of them pretty much exactly the same and, you know, use a long line and then you're fine.
Yes.
Like the only thing that's going to really change is recall when their dog is facing away and out of sight. Like that's all
fair
that's
going to
change.
Yeah.
The difference between
kind of see,
kinda
not
seeing,
really see, cannot see.
Can, like literally cannot see at
no
all.
Eyeballs.
And there's a big difference between, we specifically have one dog that was like born without eyes,
yes,
and we have dogs that have gone blind.
Over the years.
Those are very different
too.
The ones that are born blind are also quite confident in
they've never.
Yeah, the ones that we've had are just like, woo, this is how I live. Boom, charge into stuff. And then we also have dogs that have lost sight or lost a large part of their sight, and then they're quite hesitant. So there's
fair enough though.
Yeah, you come at different things there. I would say training a dog that is completely blind is vastly different than training a sighted
just
dog or a partially
a
sighted dog.
Just a slight difference over
other
things.
Yeah, and because that's, I mean, we train a lot of things based on visual cues. We train a lot with body language. I literally tell owners all the time, cool, you're not allowed to say words. Like, you're allowed to say the dog's name, yes and no. I'm literally taking away words from you for the next 2 weeks.
Yes.
Like, there you go. With a blind dog,
you can't really do that.
Yeah, I can't just be like, hey, you're going to charades your way over here. That doesn't really help.
Yep.
Right? So then we have to reteach them how to do a lot of different things. But yeah, I think...
still very doable.
Yeah, for sure. Very, very doable, but you definitely want someone with some experience.
Yes.
If you have a dog that is fully blind.
Yeah.
If somebody has trained a dog and you're just like, yes, we don't have full sight, but we have at least partial vision. You don't really need, that's fine. Go to anybody, they're fine. But like if you have a fully blind dog, you should probably talk to someone that has at least trained a dog similar once or twice before. But yeah, because we have, so like first off, you can have dogs that have like sensory, like, hey, I cannot hear, or hey, I cannot see. But you can also have dogs like physically that are like, hey, I'm like not a, I'm either missing a limb, which doesn't change them really at all, yeah. to be honest. Most of the tripods I know are just like bat out of hell, here, look at me run. but I will say, like, one of the dogs we have today, he has a problem in either his spine or his hind end where he use his hind end properly. So one of the things that happens is, like, he's a very young dog. He's barely a year. Yeah. He's not quite a year. This is apparent. It's been apparent, but they don't know what's causing it. They don't know why, and they don't know how to fix it. And it would never be fixed. This is what he was born
with. Right now, it's not like a major, like, no, he's paralyzed. He's
living his life. He's living his best life. That's totally fine. But because we noted he had an issue in his hind end
his
in the first,
was
like,
weird.
Yeah, it was the first like 3 hours he was here.
Yeah.
And I got a video.
Yeah.
From one of you that was like, hey.
Yes. He was like,
he's rabbit hopping.
We're like, is this normal? Is this
an
injury?
I was like, that's strange. Like, yeah. But so he showed it really, really young, and he just blows right through it. He doesn't care. But she's already been very clear with us that, like, he's okay, except that he gets tired easier.
Yes.
The other thing is, like, we noted he had an issue in his gait. So we did not go full send, hey, we're going to have him balance on stuff.
We're going to have normal, like, because
we're not
activity.
Doggy physio people. Like, I'm a big believer in stay in your lane. We didn't say, hey, you can't do anything. But we did not say, hey, here's a rehab program for this dog. You should just, like, throw him into everything. Mm-hmm. Because we didn't know what was going on. So she has a doggy physio. They've worked really hard to make sure that his muscle structure is okay. They've tested him for a bunch of stuff. Now she's signing up for
exercises.
Now he's starting hydrotherapy soon, because the other thing is, I said, okay, so it's going well. She's like, yeah, he can run around. He can walk good. He can, like, squat. He can jump. He can do things. And I was like, cool. But we also need to take into account that we don't know what's causing this, and we don't know how much worse it can get.
Right.
So he's still a very young dog who really enjoys his life. So we can wildly restrict his life and not let him go on hikes and not let him do stuff. But if they say, hey, he can go on hikes, they can just be short, then we should also make sure that we can do the things required if all of a sudden in the middle of the hike,
he's too tired,
his legs give out, because we don't know what's causing it. We can't predict all of the aspects of it. So I said, can you carry him?
Yeah.
And she was like, oh, he hates being picked up. And the first thing I said, well, how are you picking him up? And she went to, like, scoop him up. And I said, okay, try this. And then I just forklifted him up like I forklift Jack, because my dog has had both of his hind knees replaced, and he also has a spinal back leg issue. And I literally just lift him from underneath, which is not how normally you pick. And then he was fine. I picked him up and I walked around with him for 10 seconds. And I was like, he's good.
Got it.
And I was like, yeah, I don't think you're going to be able to scoop his back end. I think that makes him uncomfortable. But the thing is, he needs to be comfortable being carried.
Yeah.
Because he could very, very likely end up with surgery in his hind end.
Yes.
He could very, very likely end up...
just need assistance moving. Like, it's not even like, oh my gosh, worst case scenario, his back legs are paralyzed. But it could just be... And he's also little enough where, like, if he's struggling a little bit or he's a little bit too tired...
He's not that big.
He needs to be comfortable enough to be just... booped.
Yeah, if this was a 100-pound dog, it'd be a different story, but this is literally like a 40-pound dog who's quite young.
Yeah.
Yes, you know what? You guys are active. Bring him on the walks, bring him on the hikes, as long as your physio and your doctor says it's cool. But anticipate that maybe if it's more uphill, he's going to be tired.
Right.
So we also have to, I said, okay, so start him in a harness. Like, start him in a harness, and a harness that has like a back leg attachment, so that you could like pick him up by the harness if you had to. Be able to carry him, get him familiar with one of those little like doggy emergency backpack carryouts.
Yeah.
So that he can be like forklifted out of there if he has
to be. Absolutely.
I said, get him used to swimming. So last time when I had seen her, I asked her about swimming.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why she had gone and asked about it.
Oh, yeah.
Because I said, like, swimming would be good. And she goes, well, I don't think he knows how to swim. And I said, well,
no time to learn that now.
Yeah, this is a good time to learn, because first off, it is good activity.
Yeah, it could help. It's hydrotherapy.
100%. But the other thing is, I'm like, if you don't know for sure that he has this life skill, and that is something that might be the only sport he could do, like that might be one of the only things he can do in the future, is swim.
Let's get that introduced
early. Yeah, let's start that. Let's make sure we can get as many things as possible, because swimming will also be, again, if he has to have spinal surgery or back end surgery, swimming will be really, really helpful to rehab.
Yep.
So get him used to stretches, get him used to being carried, get him used to swimming, get him used to all of the things that he may need later.
Yeah.
So one of the other dogs, like the other dog in the class, has a condition where he's going to slowly lose vision.
Mm.
And he's also quite young. So I was like, cool, like this is the time to get him used to wearing goggles. right? Because our fully blind dog that comes here fairly frequently has, well, the two. One is losing vision. One is completely gone. Well, she's blind and deaf, though. That's a whole different deal. But they wear goggles. Like, they wear the rec specs because, I mean, the one that was born blind especially has two dog friends in the house. So wherever our dog friends run, we run. We're fine. Yes. We think we're fine, but we're charging into the world.
Those
getting
little eye sockets need protection.
she charges into life, man. But like, so, I mean, this is the time to get them used so that even if he does lose some vision, you wouldn't say not ever bring him to the woods. You would bring him to the woods and let him run around like he does now, but he would wear some eye protection so he doesn't get jammed in the eye because he's not going to see.
That's no fun.
Yeah, so there's a lot of people that go, oh, well, some form of any change to my dog's physical ability somehow will make training them wildly different. And I'm like, frequently, no, not at all.
No.
There are some things that can change how you train a dog when we're talking about, like, literally sensory, but, like, can they hear or can they see?
Yeah.
I would say the biggest change, though, is when they learn differently. Like, we have like dogs that do not learn the same way. Yeah, like they literally, there are some dogs that, for whatever reason, are just not.
They're not. Their processing is not the same as the average.
Yes, their processing is not the same as the average. And sometimes it's a known issue, and sometimes it's really, really not. Those ones, though, I mean, trainers need to know what they're doing in order to even figure out what's going on.
And that actually goes for like all of those things, like any sort of looking at weird gates, looking at. Can this dog hear? Like, how many dogs have you found that they actually can't hear super great, but the owner never didn't even know?
We had a board and train come here, and it was three, and I called the owner 6 days into the board and train, and I was like, are you aware that this dog is, like, pretty much deaf? Like, I can take a metal plate and drop it on concrete about a foot and a half behind the dog, and it starts looking around for the noise. But if I take the same metal plate and I go about 10 feet back, it has no idea that I've just smashed a metal plate onto concrete. And she was like, oh my God, really? And I was like, correct.
And we were in that
group. The dog was three.
We were in that group class once where, like, the one owner with the going deaf and blind situation kind of thing. And there's another owner who's just, like, shocked that for a second that, like, oh, you didn't even know about it. Like, we found out about it the dog was with us. Oh, my gosh, the owner didn't even know and, like, was shocked. But it's, like, that actually can't, like, it happens more than you think of, like, you don't know your own dog because, to be fair, it lives in your life. It's like it's in your house. Like, it responds to the cues you're giving.
Yeah, but like, it just follows your other dog around.
Right.
So you assume it's totally good because the other dog is doing things and you have no idea that it can't hear you at all.
Meanwhile, we're just back here snapping behind dogs' heads being like, oh, this dog, it'll be here for a day. And we go, oh. Oh, guys, come here. Can someone walk that way and see if the dog can track you?
Yeah, when we have them, like, they're super tired at the end of their first super long day and we start vacuuming in front of the crates and everybody wakes up and this one is just conked out.
And we're like, oh.
Then you tap, like, you happen to tap the crate with the vacuum as they go past and they wake up and they're like, holy shit, look, a vacuum.
And you're like, oh, noted.
And then you call the owner and you're like, hey, so just are they so by know. Chance scared of the vacuum? And they're like, no, they never seem to care. And I'm like, correct. Right. I know why.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. How's their recall? Yeah. They've never had great recall. Correct. I do know why. So, yeah. I mean, when we're talking about training and how we do training differently, if we're talking about something really physical, like, hey, this dog is a tripod, hey, this dog is missing an eye,
this dog has like a heart condition,
this dog, well, we might change something for heart condition, well, not for like our training, we do like behavior. We do behavior, sure,
that's what I mean, I'm just like of a physical,
then we're not going to train too much, or we're not going to change too much in the training. But if we're talking about like how they get information in or how they communicate back, like how, if we're changing something about how we have to communicate to the dog or something is different about how they process information, then we do have to make a couple adjustments. But people are really wary of like dogs from rescues and dogs from things that are, they have something physical, like they're missing a limb and whatever. And how much that'll change. And it's like, not really. Not really at all.
Yeah.
I
think it's not like how you would train in those types of situations. It's just like, what would you train for?
Yeah. Like, and the other thing I will say, we change frequently for dogs that have like something wrong with them physically, or they do have some sort of communication issue. We change the order of things that we train.
Like
we
what put a priority a, yeah, we is put for a what different, they should be.
Yeah. Learning. So a yes. lot of times like we train a lot of things in a, not a very specific order, but like always specific to the dog.
Yeah.
But there's a couple variants on what we think is
pattern. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a couple variants to what we think is priority, but they're all pretty
similar.
We put a lot of the similar priorities together. When we have a dog that certainly either communicates differently or interprets the world differently or processes it differently, we do change then.
Yeah.
We're pivoting. The other thing is if there's a physical issue, we also change there because all of a sudden we make it super important that like, hey, they can be contained. Hey, they can be lifted.
Yes, they can be handled.
Yeah, vetting all of it. Like that dog is probably going to need more vetting than a lot of other dogs. So they need to be super comfortable being handled.
Yeah.
So it's not something we then talk about for 3 minutes. It's something we talk about for a whole hour.
Yeah.
Minimum, right? Yep. And it's something we work on specifically to make sure that they're going to be okay.
Yeah.
When that's going to happen. It's like, oh, hey, as soon as we get, you know, a doodle poodle type thing versus anything else, we go, hey, you need to do a lot of handling. You're going to be doing grooming.
Grooming prep.
It's the same thing.
Yes.
We go, oh, if you have something where I know you're going to be seeing 14 vets.
Cool.
Or you're going to be there every 3 months versus once a year.
Let's practice some restraint.
Yeah, let's restrain. Let's practice manipulation. Let's practice stretching. Let's practice like looking in your eyes and your ears and your things. And like, yes, like let's practice blood draws. Let's practice so many different things and so much cooperative care so that they go, okay, cool. This is fine.
I've trained for this.
Yes. Yeah. So we will then prioritize that over something like really nice walking when your dog may not be a great walker.
Right.
Right? We're gonna care a lot that your dog can go to the vet and get fixed enough right. that your dog can be go for a walk.
We love that.
Your dog can't go to the vet.
We love big goals, big dreams, but it's also like, what is this dog realistically going to absolutely need to do?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Off-leash recall for the dog that likely won't be able to run a ton. Not really a thing. Your dog is legit blind. It's not running off leash. Nope. That's actually not a thing in a loose area. Yeah.
Put a pin in that.
No. We'll do that another day. Perhaps. Today, though, we're going to do how we communicate. Today, we're going to do,
proper management.
Yes. Like, we're going to do very, very different things priority-wise, but we're not going to change a ton. And we're also... So many people go, oh my God, well, my dog is deaf, so it can't do this. Or, oh my God, my dog is a tripod, so it can't do this. And I'm like,
no.
Okay, their dogs are pretty capable, folks. They can do most things that any other dog can do. Sometimes you got to change it a little bit.
You got to pivot.
You gotta
explain some things differently.
Yeah. But or break change it down how a bit they. More. Yeah, change how they like. Get all the way through a desk or change how they get to do the thing. Like
that being said, on the flip side, I think there's also, it's important like to acknowledge when your dog can't, like if your dog can't jump in the car.
Yeah.
No, it's not because it's stubborn or whatever. It might not be able to see how to get into the car.
Yeah. Like so many people go, hey, my dog is so stubborn on recall. And this dog is like bouncing around, staring at them. They have food and then they look away and they obviously cannot hear anything. And I'm like, right. Your dog is not stubborn. It is indeed deaf. Or at least mostly deaf. Like, yes, again, we can take our metal plate, slam them together, and the dog is going to look around. But, like, no, it can't hear you calling 20 feet away. It has no idea. So, if your dog is not jumping into the car because it has severe arthritis, it's not stubborn. It's in pain, right? And maybe that means we also then teach it to use stairs to get into the car. Or we teach it to be lifted properly to get into the car. We do have dogs that as they come here and they come here longer and longer, they age up. And we have a dog right now that like decent arthritis and it had to learn how to use, Shelby. Shelby, because that truck is so tall. So she won't jump in the truck anymore. Have you seen the little staircase?
No.
Oh my God. They have this nice little expandable staircase, but it's fabric. So Shelby was like, no, I don't touch that. And then we had to be like, hey, and then they worked on it forever.
Oh my God. I have a pair of pet stairs at home. I should bring them here.
Oh my God, you should. Okay. Yeah, because they bought this little expandable staircase, and then they trained with it so that when they came here, they could be like, hey. And then Wyatt said, no, I just leap.
Well,
and they were like, no, he can do it. And I was like, well, he full sent.
Well, yeah.
Now he's good, though. Now he shows, and Shelby just does Shelby, do the stairs. Yeah. But she was like, no, I don't do the fabric. And then it was like, no, you do the fabric. It was a whole thing. But they have really tall trucks.
Yes.
Yeah, so she can't jump at all into the one truck anymore. That's, oh my God, I can't jump into that truck, to be fair.
Yeah,
and then the other vehicle is also a little bit high. And the last time I saw her jump into it, she kind of half slipped with her knee.
Yeah, the last thing I think I saw at Private Studios. Yeah. Like she tried.
She tried, and
then
she
could not
make
it. No. And it was just, well, Shelby.
She was sad.
Shelby.
Yeah.
My heart.
So, but then they also saw it, and I went, wow, I think...
Or carry.
Yeah, we need to either lift or carry. And they went and they got stairs, and then they trained with the stairs.
Hell
they
yeah,
were like,
they did.
Yeah, we don't, she didn't want to touch them.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was great. Oh my God, it was great. They've had the stairs now for like
a month
or two. It was great.
I don't see them anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, they come on your day off. So sorry. But yeah, so, I mean, yes, there's a lot of dogs that are born with things that make them a little bit different, but also as they age and they grow up, just being like, hey, my dog can't be carried, so it doesn't get to go on car rides anymore because it can't get in the car. Hey, my dog can't go and do this because it's a totally trainable issue.
Yeah.
Like,
I think, well, I hate to say it because I feel like that's the moral of every one of these goddamn podcasts. But like, yeah, if also like, if especially if a young dog, or even if you don't, if you go to the vet and they start to flag like an issue, I think that's also a really good sign that you should start to get training. Even if it's a perfectly good dog, even if you're like, wow, it's not reactive, it lives a great life in my life. If all of a sudden your vet has said, oh no, this your dog might lose its sight in a couple of years. Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe go find a trainer, even if you didn't think you'd need one in the first place, even if it's a well-behaved dog or whatever. Get some training because you might need those down the road. You might need some skills. Your dog might need to learn how to, you will communicate with them, might need some skill sets, whatever it is.
If someone goes, like, if you go in, so frequently we see dogs with CCL tears, so they tear their knee, and a lot of people cannot afford surgery for that right away. So they give painkillers and that's fine. And they're like, hey, I'll save up and I'll do surgery in 6 months, 12 months, whatever. That's the time to go to a trainer and be like, hey, what will I need when my dog gets surgery? Well, your dog will need to be crate trained. Yeah. Your dog will need to be okay in a crate. It would also probably do well to be trained in a pen. You should practice being in a puppy pen now. You know what else you should practice? Stretching. You know what else you should practice? Like, lay on the side, bang. Hey, you're dead.
We're
practicing stretching. The other thing is, so a lot of the rehab stuff is like putting their back feet on stuff, doing downs to stands, sits to stands.
Yeah.
Well, if your dog doesn't have a down, a sit, or a stand, much less a transition between all of them, your rehab
it's hard to do.
Yeah, the first time you ask your dog to do all these rehab things, when they are in pain and they are literally like, hey, my leg apparently has been replaced by an entire metal thing, that's not a great learning mindset.
Even if you already have a lot of like those types of skill sets, it's also nice to find a trainer even just to give you an outlet if your dog can't all of a sudden do outlets it's been relying on, right? If you've been relying on going for long runs and going on hikes and stuff to tire out your dog, doing a lot of physical stuff, and then all of a sudden you have no access to this physical stuff, but you have a dog that still needs an outlet, you're just a normal person. You might not know what to do with your dog then. Find a trainer then who can give you a list of 10 activities to do with a dog who needs crate rest.
Be like, hey, yeah, if my dog my dog will have to have surgery. My dog will be crate rested for 4 weeks. It'll be on light duties
mobility.
For 2 months after that. Yep. Or
what are activities I can do so my dog does not lose its mind?
100%.
A trainer should be able to absolutely come up with ideas.
Literally that.
Doesn't mean you have to do intensive training right off the bat.
No.
But it's especially when we're talking about, you know, there's an injury you might need surgery for later down the road. There might be some sort of disease or condition that declines over the years. Like,
and you know what? This is, again, not an online thing and not a group class. This is a private lesson thing.
Yes.
This is a call a trainer and get some private lessons. Because here's the thing is, yes, 3 private lessons is kind of expensive for some trainers. That's,
sure.
That's true. Here, 100%. But you know what else is expensive is when you've paid
$4,000
to replace a dog's knee and do a knee surgery, and then you do not rehab them properly,
oh
so they
God.
Tear stitches because they can't be crated.
That's really expensive.
Yeah, then they mess their knee up again, so you have to do it again. Even just a neuter. Like a neuter now is like $700. You need to rest your dog. You know how
price
expensive it is to then pop stitches on a spay or a neuter of a 15
because your dog was going crazy?
Yeah, your dog is like 15, 18 months old, 2 years old. You're like, cool, I waited a bit longer. And we're like, yes, do that. But the older you wait, the bigger of a
the
surgery
more they
is.
Need.
But then also, the risk of it is high. Like, they can pop stitches, and then it's that's a problem for a 2-year-old. So, yes, 3 private lessons is expensive, but so is going back to the Emerge Vet on a Saturday night because your dog has popped stitches because you've never crated them, so they busted out of a crate 24 hours after surgery. Just saying, that's a thing that comes up at least once a month.
In the checking account.
Yeah, that's expensive. Yeah. So, yeah, that's what we think maybe people should consider is, first off, if you're looking at getting a dog and the dog has something that makes it slightly different, don't be scared off by it.
No.
May just change your approach. It also might not change at all, to be honest.
Yep.
The other thing, though, is trainers can help with that. Like, trainers just because you go, hey, my dog is this, does not mean, my dog is a tripod, does not mean you have to hire a trainer that has worked with 70,000 tripods. That's not going to change much. I would probably find someone with experience if your dog is blind.
Yeah.
But for everything else, for the most part, and if your dog...
If a trainer says this can't be trained because your dog is kind of deaf,
maybe don't go there.
Not recommended.
I would also say find someone with experience if the dog, like, again, thinks differently. But that's a given.
Yeah.
Like, if the dog learns differently. That one's a given. But, like... Yeah, sometimes people really get scared off by dogs attending training because, they're a tripod or they're deaf or I'm like, no, I know dogs.
It just means they need stuff.
Yeah.
Just might need different stuff, might need less stuff, more stuff, whatever.
And
but
if your dog is, becoming severely arthritic, it is going to have a leg removed, it is, going to have surgery.
Like, they're dogs. Things happen.
Things happen so
My
much.
My God.
100%. These are things trainers can work with.
Yep.
It's the same as people who go, well, my dog is not good with nail trims, so I can never cut their nails. I have to sedate them. I'm like, no, you can hire a trainer.
Yeah.
Hey, my dog is about to be crate rested and is going to be injured, is going to have surgery, and is going to, hire a trainer. Yep. Hire that trainer to teach you what you will need to know for the rehab.
What your
the
dog
skill
will
sets
need to
at
know.
Least. They may not know the rehab plan, but I guarantee they're going to know that your dog is going to have to lay outside with an ice pack on it. So it's going to have to be able to lay there calmly for 10 minutes. They're going to know your dog is going to need different positions. Your dog is going to need to know how to move their limbs, and they can help teach you that. And if you talk to your vet and you say, hey, I'm going to have the surgery, what will the rehab look like? And they give you a list of exercises. You can go to a trainer and go,
oh my gosh,
how do I train these before
we
I do the
surgery?
We can
all work together. Yeah.
Oh my God.
We
Everybody working together.
Oh,
wild.
What an idea.
But yeah, so that's our moderately educational rant on dogs with disabilities or dogs that are going to go through some sort of massive surgery or life change or just a change in how they live.
Yep.
I'll say a change in how they live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's fair.
Yeah. I am only going to ask you one question.
I know what the question is.
How many times have you listened to the Tortured Poets Department? In mind, folks, the album has only been released for 48 hours.
I think I'm on listen 6.
Of the whole thing? Both parts of it?
Yeah.
Wow.
I listen to both parts every time.
Okay.
So what would you say is your favorite song thus far?
Well, I don't remember song names very well. What is your favorite song?
Do you want me
song?
To pull up the list?
I don't know if that will help me so far. But what is your favorite song? So far, you had texted me at 2 in the morning, the morning it was released, with your top 3 favorite songs so far after listen 1.
Yeah.
2 in the morning, I woke up to the text of these are my 3 favorites so far. Well, has that changed
so
in the last 24 hours?
You
have a ranking.
My ranking.
Wow, that's intense.
Yeah. Well, there's 31 songs, folks.
Okay.
My top 3, which I would have to still agree with here, is number 1 is I Can Do It With a Broken Heart, because it's a bop, but it's so sad.
Yeah.
But, it's so happy. Good for you.
That's the one
Get
with
a girl.
The, I can cry and be
I
super
cry
productive.
So much, but I'm so productive.
That's
an art.
I am, you know what?
I've never related to a lyric more.
Yeah.
I'm listening to it for the first time, and I'm you're listening to the whole song, and you're wow, this is all true. Wow.
You don't have a tattoo. You've never gotten a tattoo.
I think I might get a tattoo from this album.
Yeah,
I would not be shocked.
If you get a tattoo, I'm very sure your first tattoo will be Taylor related.
Yes.
Second off, if it is a tattoo that's Taylor related, I'm gonna need it to be that lyric, because I heard that and I went, oh my God, that's Sienna.
Yes.
That is Sienna. There is no
Nothing
one I know
to my core more
that is as productive
more.
as you are. Even while
it is an art. Like, wow.
Yeah.
Sorry,
number two.
Number two is Clara Bow. It's such like a, it's just a good song. Okay. And it's just like very hopeful. It's very nice. And then the third one is Thank You, Amy. Cause like that is, if we remember back to, Folklore Folks and Mad Woman.
We all remember
this
that.
This is Mad Woman's twin sister. Like, this is the soul songs together.
Okay.
Like, this is, we are mad and we are like, fuck you.
Okay.
You know?
Okay. I'll put those at the top of my list.
And then obviously, as a fourth contender, so it's number four is Who's Afraid of Little Old Me. And then in the side, it's the note on this song says, get it, Taylor. Amazing run song. I better finish a race to this. Because, like, it truly is a really good power finish your last kilometer song.
Okay. Because, yes, you then listened to this on the best run of your...
The best run I've ever had.
Yeah.
Like, not, like, physically, but just,
so
like...
So, for those that have a Taylor fan in their life and that have not listened to the full 31 songs and probably won't be, she's broken down the four that you should listen to, or at least pretend you've listened to, and say, hey, then you have a few points about them, because...
What
Who
I
doesn't
will say,
have a Taylor fan in their
it's
life?
It's what
that
I
has
told
to
mom
this.
In the sense of just if you wanted to humor the Taylor fan in your life, just remember one track title. Because then when they go, oh my gosh, you can just say, oh my gosh, So Long London. And they would be like, track five, I know. Like, right?
Got it.
I think if you're looking for a niche, I think fucking listen to the album. Like, you won't regret it.
Obviously,
in
everyone will do that.
If you're looking for a quick, like, you don't know what to talk about and you're like, eh? I think if you're looking for a good one that would make any Taylor Swift fan like go off on a little bit of a tangent.
And then be distracted enough not to ask you follow-up questions.
Right. I think probably The Smallest Man Who Ever Lived is a good... Because then there like you're going to get sidetracked. You're going to... Anything with that good of a bridge.
Ah,
right. I also think... Well...
I think that's enough examples for the people.
Yeah.
I'm keeping her from the rest of the spreadsheet, folks. So there we go. There is a lot more
to
the spreadsheet.
It's a really good album, though.
I'll give you all a summary of the spreadsheet once
I think
am told about
you should just listen to it, because it's only 2 hours and 2 minutes.
Only?
The whole album.
That's so short. That's such a short commute.
Yes.
Okay. Lovely. I think we've all learned a lot in the last 5 minutes here. Hopefully, the whole episode. But who knows? We'll see. People can just put those four songs on and they can learn just as much as I'm sure they did from this whole podcast.
You bet.
Okay, well, this was educational, maybe. We have to go do letouts.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye.